Today is December 5th, 2018, and this is episode number 491 of the Apple Context Machine. It's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief, co-founder of TMO. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at facebook.com/groups/context machine. Now, my guest today is one Chuck Joyner, as peculiar a duck as ever there was. But man, oh man, do I love this guy. He is producer and host of Mac Voices. It's a video podcast. It's absolutely terrific. Chuck is one of the single best moderators I have ever seen, period, in the business of moderating. And his shows are terrific. You should absolutely check him out. Welcome to ACM, Chuck.
Thank you, Brian. I've been waiting for a long time to be part of that bass lick. I love that bass lick.
You know, that was recorded by one Ricky Spiro.
I didn't know that. Ricky did that.
Ricky did that, yeah.
Ah, impressive. Impressive. Yeah. It's such a simple signature to the show, but I always love it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I'm glad that he bequeathed that to us on once he got too busy with his grad school. Did you listen to the Halloween episode?
I did. It was interesting to have you back.
Yes, it was, especially with him having to clean up everything. Yeah. Of course, that was supposed to be the last show, and here we are, I think, four shows later.
Yeah, and I keep looking around for the interns, and I haven't seen them yet.
We don't talk about that.
Oh, I see. Excuse me.
Shh. All right, well, we have three topics. I'm not really sure exactly where they're going to go, so let us not tease you too much outside of whatever end up going into the actual title of the show. So we'll just see where this goes. And I think where we're going to start with Facebook. And I think, Chuck, you've become a big fanboy of Facebook. Am I getting that right?
Not exactly a fanboy, but my attitudes about Facebook have become pragmatic, shall we say.
Okay, do tell.
Well, Facebook is not my preferred social media choice, but two things happened. Well, that's sort of where we go. I really always enjoyed Twitter until Twitter got kind of taken over by so much of the political intrigue that seems to be the rage these days. And unfortunately, the tech people seemed to stop posting, or some of them became political. And so Twitter kind of lost some of its value for me. And then realistically, looking at Facebook is where a whole lot of people are, and not just people that are your friends and my friends and, you know, tech friends, but across a lot of different interests and tech and non-tech people. And if I want to reach more people with Mac Voices, you know, you got to go where the people are. And so that's one reason that I expanded my Facebook presence, let's put it that way. I mean, not as much personally, but for the show.
And are you using a page or a group?
Both.
Both. You have a page and a group.
Correct.
Are those? We'll get your plug in.
I don't know the URLs, but yeah, you'll find it. Just type in Mac Voices on Facebook and you'll find the page and you'll find the group, because it's just the Mac Voices page and the Mac Voices group. So that's it.
Well, I'm a member of the group.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm following the page. I don't really use Facebook, you know. Let me rephrase that. I use Facebook for TMO. And I use Facebook for the Apple Context Machine. We do have the above mentioned, and I'll get my plugin because I'm apparently better at this than you, at facebook.com/group/context machine, where we have a group specifically for listeners of the show. And I enjoy that immensely and really just could not care less about the rest of Facebook.
And Brian, that's sort of where I am to some degree. Maybe not quite where you are, because I do find that if you spend just a little time and find some of your tech and non-tech friends on Facebook, you can kind of keep up with things a little better than maybe you could. And I'm notoriously bad at that.
I've got too many racist relatives, man.
Okay. I'm not going to explore that anywhere.
It just gets so infuriating. Anyway, Facebook.
Well, there's no question there's a bunch of noise. But you know what? At one point, Facebook had a lot of noise and not a lot of meat. And Twitter had all the meat and no noise. And now it's leveled out, and at least for me. And a lot of it depends on who you follow, and I get that. But it really has leveled out so that the two now are, any given day, one could be more valuable to me than the other.
I don't want to be immersed in it issue with folks who are on Facebook because they like to argue so that they can argue. And I think that Facebook brings that out a lot more than Twitter does. I'm not saying there aren't arguments on Twitter. I'm saying it's easier not to become immersed into the arguments on Twitter.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess I've just become pretty good at on both platforms of just kind of filtering that out. And I mean just visually filtering it out. Not that I have any particular controls in place except the odd, block this person for a month or, to unfollow this person because I just can't stand it anymore. But for the most part, it's just like it's easy to skip over that stuff and find things that you do find useful or interesting, or people that you really care about and they've done something interesting, or their kids have done something interesting, or whatever. So
I know for a fact, though, that it's not using Facebook that was serving as the basis or the progenitor of this particular conversation. That it was more about some of the criticisms that Facebook is currently receiving.
Well, yeah, I mean, there as we record this, there have been a few articles written about Sheryl Sandberg and Mark Zuckerberg, and should they stay? Should they go? Should one stay? Should the other one go? Should the other one stay and the first one go? And I think it's really interesting, and I can't figure out where the genesis of these, because there's this sense that we all should judge this. And at the end of the day, that's up to – I mean, it's Zuckerberg's company, but he has to answer to a board of directors, and they're the ones that are going to determine it.
So we should just sit back and accept whatever it is they dish out to us? And the board of directors and capitalism knows best?
Well, capitalism does know best, but that's another story.
Capitalism seldom knows best. Capitalism knows most expedient.
Folks, did you hear me pull the rod back and throw it out there and just
yes, I heard that. Chuck, I am a fan of capitalism. I am also a fan of government regulating the excesses of capitalism, because capitalism always goes to excess. Always. It has never not gone to excess when allowed to serve its own purposes unfettered. Right? So I am not anti-capitalist, but I am pro properly regulated capitalism. And there's always going to be a push, a back and forth push between the free market and an overly regulated market. And there should always be a back and forth push, right? In that we're not perfect beings, and that we're never going to get this stuff perfect. It should always be this back and forth tension going between properly regulated, underregulated, overregulated, free market, under free market, over free market. And it should be going back and forth, et cetera. I believe in the power of human beings to do great things when allowed to do so. But this notion that it's none of our business how Facebook does stuff, that is balderdash.
Well, no, wait a minute. Now, we have to be sure we're talking about the same thing. If we're talking about government regulation, that's one thing because of some of what Facebook has done. If we're talking about just the operation of the company, and maybe we're talking about the same, maybe we're talking about both, but I'm referring more to all the data breaches and, you know, those kind of things. And I'm not convinced that that needs to be government regulated. I think that should be user regulated. And I think the board of directors should regulate that. They should have somebody's head on a platter for these constant data breaches.
But why would they if Facebook faces no financial consequences for it? There is absolutely zero incentive for the board of directors to do anything about data breaches or anything about misusing user information if there are no consequences to it.
At some point, there are going to be consequences if this keeps up.
Well, there'll only be consequences if we, the users, have a voice and say so.
Well, we, the users, are eventually going to develop a class action suit against Facebook.
Apparently we do have some input on who runs Facebook.
We have some
input. I accept your apology.
I don't remember that part. We have some input, but I do question, you know, how much time and effort and smoke and fire is being designated to this simply because it's not going to be our decision. I mean, I'm having a hard time visualizing an uprising that's going to push Zuckerberg or Sandberg out. Forget whether they should or not. That's a whole other discussion. It's just the idea that, you know, this has become such a hot topic, like so many things become a hot topic. And
well, to your point,
it's all academic.
To your point, they will not be pushed out until there is some kind of capitalistic backlash to Facebook. So, like, you know, until the board and the shareholders are riled up for some reason, and they won't be riled up until and if come the day that Facebook starts making less money. You can accept my apology if you would like, because like who actually runs the company is, to your point, up to the shareholders and the board of directors. But I absolutely and completely disagree with the idea that we, the users, you know, should shut our mouth about it because it's none of our business. And I know that's not quite what you said, but it's essentially what you said.
Well, sort of. I mean, I guess watching Facebook shares tumble, and not necessarily because of the downturn in the stock market right now, in my mind is a call to arms, if you will, for the board of directors, that they have to be paying attention to that, and they have to be saying, you know, what is driving this? Now, I'm not pretending to be versed in Facebook's revenues this quarter, last quarter, the quarter before, year over year, but the stock prices are dropping. The stock price is dropping, excuse me. And that really says something. We have political questions, the issues over the election and Facebook's role in that, whether through action or inaction.
How about Facebook's role in the, I don't know if we can call it genocidal attack on the Rohingya in Myanmar? Right, I mean, it doesn't get much play here in the States, but that, I mean, this actually brings, Chuck, to me, brings in what I think is the real issue with Facebook, and that is the enormous power that Facebook has amassed, an enormous amount of power to disseminate information, and really terrible human beings have learned how to manipulate that, and Facebook hasn't done squat about it. The Russians did it in our elections. The Russians have done it in multiple elections in Europe. The Russians did it in Brexit. And the Myanmar military did it in Myanmar to foment a hate-filled death campaign against the Rohingya in that country. And those are just the examples, really, that we know about. And my problem is that Facebook has so much power. I think that the government does, governments do have some kind of role to play in regulating this company. And furthermore, I think that Mark Zuckerberg does not have the wisdom to wield the power that he has built for himself. Let me take this down one more step. If you compare Mark Zuckerberg to the empires of Bill Gates or Steve Jobs, or, you know, certainly to, you know, the generation that came before them with, you know, like the, on the hardware side, the difference between the amount of power that Steve Jobs had, like, you know, Steve Jobs was, you know, needed to learn some things, right? You know, he got forced out of Apple and he went and did Next. And then, you know, he had a bunch of things happen and he did a bunch of things and he built some things and failed some things. And he learned along the ways and he came back to Apple. And he was this amazing manager. But when he was young, he was not a good manager. He was not a good manager. But his decisions didn't affect the lives of billions of people around the world. And Facebook's decisions do affect the lives of billions of people around the world. The Facebook's decisions affect politics around the world. They affect security and safety of some people around the world. And Mark Zuckerberg has neither the wisdom nor life experience to wield that power that he legitimately built for himself. And that's my real issue with Mr. Zuckerberg.
Okay, so this may shock you, but I think I agree with you with about 85% of that.
All right. Doom. That's this week.
The example context machine. No, I agree with you. What fascinates me about Zuckerberg is the lack of accountability that he's held to. I mean, if this were the military, if this were a company, any other company in just about any other industry, somebody would have been demoted, fired.
Well, you know, but again,
spirited away, retired.
Mr. Zuckerberg's wisdomless leadership of his company and the mistakes that they have made in pursuit of selling advertising, selling us as the product. And, you know, he makes all this noise about connecting people and how incredibly important it is to connect people. But if you like, the more we see from leaked documents and documents that are forced out by court cases, and even documents that are subpoenaed by various governments, the more we learn, the more I think we see that this lip service about the importance of connecting people is actually only in service of the advertising, rather than the advertising being in service of connecting people. It's connecting people in service of advertising. And again, that stems from his lack of wisdom.
Okay. I mean, you know me, Brian. I will always take the opposite side from what you're saying. So I'll do that in this case, whether I happen to believe it or not. But you could probably say that about just about any company. Okay, if at a superficial level or at a deeper level. So if I'm a car manufacturer, you know, I want you to buy my car. So I'm going to do my best to convince you that you will, you know, younger, look trimmer, be sexier, you know, by driving my car.
Be greener.
Yeah,
be faster, be cooler.
Be everything.
Yeah.
You know, and in the service of selling my car. So I'm not sure I can condemn.
No, but there's a difference. There's a difference. The difference is that Facebook, like car companies aren't saying that our mission here is to make emissions, you know, lower across the planet. No car company is saying that. They might be saying that they're wanting to reduce the emissions of the cars, but they're not pretending that that's the excuse for what they do. Facebook actively pretends that their whole raison d'etre, and it may have been true at one point, was to connect people. And that, like I said, has been subverted into service of advertising rather than the advertising being in service of connecting people or supporting the idea of connecting people. And it's all for more. I got to make more money.
Okay, but advertising is their product.
No, we are the product.
Well, we're the product, but advertising is what they sell to make money. They sell us.
Yeah, but they do it. They just do it in such the way they try to connect us. The way the means that they make to fill in the gaps of our lives that we have not willingly and knowingly chosen to give to the company. Those ways are just they're crappy. I don't want to use the word evil, but I want to use the word evil.
Well, I this is where I told you I agree with you to 85%, but I'm going to defend them because at the end of the day, you have to take a little responsibility for what you post, for the fact that you are the product.
But
that doesn't know that they're the product of Facebook right now,
it's not just that stuff. I agree with you on the post, Chuck. I absolutely agree with you on posts. But what about all the ways that Facebook goes and tries to get data about us that are not related to our posts?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, gee, Brian, nobody else does that, do they?
Well, there are some companies that do it. But Facebook...
Oh, come on.
There are companies that do it. I agree with you.
Well, I'm thinking about several thousand companies that, you know, as every opportunity they get, they want me to sign up for their email list. They want me to, they'll give me
a choice that you can make or not. Keep going.
Yeah, well, they'll give me a free dessert if I'll sign up for the email list. The sneakiest one I love is, can we email you your receipt?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we need your email. Guess what? Now they've got my email address. It's fascinating the way they go about it and the way that.
But they're still making a choice to give that information. But when you don't know the information is being collected about you by Facebook, that is crap. And Facebook's pursuit of making these connections at all in any cost is wrong.
I do not disagree with that. I do not disagree with that. I am saying, though, that is the world today. Your cell phone carrier is doing it.
Yeah, well, I'm protesting.
Your credit card company is doing it.
Yeah, that's true. And credit card companies did it for decades before the Silicon Valley tech giants came along. That's an excellent point.
Exactly. And so now everything is just on steroids. All right. Everything is on steroids.
But that comes back to my original premise here. Everything is on steroids, but the young Harvard punk who runs this company does not have the wisdom to manage this power on steroids.
He manages it to your satisfaction.
Correct. To my satisfaction.
Okay, so if I'm an investor in Facebook and they are making money, then it is to my satisfaction.
Yes.
So if I have a financial interest in it,
of course you're welcome to disagree with me.
Well, the funny thing is, I told you I'm taking the opposite side because I can see both sides of the argument. What disturbs me is, I mean, honestly, and then I'm not a Facebook investor. Let's make that real clear.
And neither am I.
I do not own. Yeah. Okay.
I own a few shares in Apple.
You and me both. Okay. So. I'm not a Facebook investor, but I can see the idea. What fascinates me is that a CEO who has had stewardship over these issues and these practices remains in place, and his lieutenants remain in place.
Well, it's because from a corporatist capitalist standpoint, they've done a terrific job.
Well, why is the stock tanking?
Well, that's an excellent question. I would argue that it is impossible to divorce Facebook's recent stock decline from Wall Street's broader declines and the larger economic worries that are going on in the world.
Right.
You can't divorce it. Now, I'm not earlier you made the point that Facebook's decline seemed to be separated from that. And it may well be. I just don't know that we can definitively say so. I would say that when you look at the things that have come to light, what Wall Street is worried about is massive government regulation on Facebook. and possibly breaking the company up. I don't know how you would break the company up, but possibly breaking the company up. And that's what we're seeing happen in the stock market right now.
And if that's the case, then why hasn't the board removed Zuckerberg?
Well, because
and or Sandberg.
Because they believe, I would assume it's because they believe that Mark can navigate these waters. Mr. Zuckerberg can navigate these waters.
Yeah, but the boat's taken on water, Brian. Because it's to your point, day after day we see a new release, a new leak,
New data breach, a new bit of disgustingness.
New whistleblower. Yep.
Like Russia's meddling in the Brexit campaign. Is that story has come nowhere near to properly playing itself out. Nowhere near.
And you probably have followed that closer than I have. But it does not surprise me, unfortunately, because I've developed a rather cynical view of Facebook's management. And these are opinions. These are not necessarily facts. But when you do look at the facts,
everything I say is a fact.
Okay, well, I'm glad we established that. Why did you say that 20 minutes ago?
I'm so kidding.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. It really is, it's fascinating to watch this company. Think about what would happen and let's pick on Apple. What would happen to Tim Cook if we had this many breaches, this many problems, this many leaks, this many of all these things? They'd be calling for Tim Cook's head on a stick.
Well, okay.
And but Mark shows up in front of Congress and says, I'm sorry. And they let him go.
Yeah. He says, I'll have to get back to you on that. and of course, he didn't show up. He didn't show up in the UK Parliament.
Right. Yes.
And he didn't show up at all.
Yes.
Yeah, so we had Charlotte there, by the way. Charlotte Henry was at that hearing.
Mm.
Just FYI. It's cool.
Yeah.
She has her press credentials in the UK. She wear you have to wear it in a fedora with mm-hmm. a trench coat. You got to have it sticking in your hat band.
Wow.
That's not true. None of that's true. Why would you accept that?
Because you started to wear a hat, so I figured you were just getting ready to go overseas.
Oh yeah, it could be. Well, yeah, but I'm not credentialed I'm not credentialed anywhere.
Oh, but you're getting ready to. At least you'll dress the part.
I will dress the part. Yes.
When you've got the credentials and you got the hat to put them in.
All right. Well, so I was, but the thing I was going to say before I went off in that ridiculous tangent is that there is a lot of differences between Apple's and Facebook's business models that don't really make that what your initial statement there, like what would happen if Tim Cook did all this? I mean, maybe if Apple was in the, social networking industry, maybe Tim would have made those kinds of mistakes. He just, that's just not what Apple does.
Well, to go back to Tim's comment that allegedly incensed Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
That he would not find himself in this position.
Yes, that is fair. Okay, all right. I see your point.
Yeah. Right. I think that was unfortunately, it was to Mark Zuckerberg's detriment, but it was a very fair point.
Extremely fair point.
There's some things that you and I are not going to find ourselves in certain situations because we're just not going to find ourselves in those situations. You're not going to put yourself in that situation. And that Facebook has done that.
Yes.
Facebook has put itself in this position. And
because
now,
Mark doesn't have the wisdom to run his company.
Well, you start to, again. You start to wonder who is running the company, because what
he is. Oh, I think he rules Facebook with an iron fist. He and Sheryl both. Two iron fists.
Then note to the Facebook board of directors: you better watch what's going on.
Yeah, that is true. And of course, we don't know we don't know what's going on behind the scenes at Facebook. The board. Probably, I would be shocked if the board hadn't at least had a talking to about Facebook's stock decline And I would imagine that Mark Zuckerberg either told him that he'd get back to them or gave him a nice song and dance.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, hey, the board ousted Steve Jobs. You know, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not suggesting it's time for that at all for Facebook. On the other hand, I think somebody needs to be looking at what's going on and the consistency of these issues. It's not a one and done, and it wasn't, you know, somebody made a mistake. It's somebody made a mistake, then somebody made another mistake, then somebody made another mistake. And then there was this ugly practice we decided to engage in, and, you know, it just goes on and on.
I think because I actually – okay. I am aware that Mark Zuckerberg has accomplished some amazing things. More – you know, he's done more with his life than I have. Right? So, you know, let me just be clear about that. Absolutely. I wish that he would get the kind of mentors who would – who would lecture him and yell at him about privacy. I wish, like, Tim Cook was one of his mentors. I wish that Tim Cook was on Facebook's board. I mean, I can't imagine they would ever bring him on, and there may even be some conflicts there. But I, you know, like, I wish that Mark Zuckerberg would surround himself with people who were actually concerned about privacy. And who were concerned about the limits to which Facebook should go to trade on our privacy. I don't think it's going to happen. But
yeah, you know, I mean, we'll never get to the other stories, but there is one thing that I'm willing to contemplate that as a reason for some of this and the acceptability of some of this, and that is that there seem to be generational differences in views on privacy. And I'm wondering if certain we're not going to pick on anybody's age, joking or not, but I do wonder.
Why not? Are you just meeting me?
Yeah, thanks. But I do wonder that the generation that has grown up and has really grown up with Facebook and seems to embrace a much more open lifestyle about everything. That they're much more comfortable than you or I are sharing everything. And I mean, things that you and I would not necessarily that we're ashamed of. It's just that's not something you put online. But
But I think this comes back to this whole notion of Mark Zuckerberg not having the wisdom to control the power that he has built. I mean, that to your very point, there are generational aspects that make him unfit to wield the power that he has built.
But that's based on your values.
Okay. Correct.
If you ask that of a 20-year-old, an 18-year-old, you know, a 25-year-old, hey, I don't know.
I don't ask 18-year-olds anything. Why would I start asking it?
Okay. Well, there goes half the listenership. No, I think you have to go through all these filters to get to a truth, or you have to at least put them in the mix. And I don't know what the answers are. I think they're good questions to ask. I think they're things to think about. I think probably a little more like a capitalist. I'm looking at the stock price and using that as a measure of success. And I'm saying to myself, okay, people seem to like Facebook. People use Facebook. A lot of people use Facebook. And with these practices, though, when is the reckoning going to come? You know, at what point are they going to say, hey, you know what? That just crosses the line for me.
Well, that's a good question.
I don't think we have an answer.
And we don't have an answer, no. Not at all.
No.
Not at all. Well, let's move on to topic two.
What was topic two?
Topic two is Tumblr's death spiral.
Yes.
Right. So, like, you were, like, saying some things, and then I stopped you from saying some things.
Yes. You're right. Okay.
This is before the show.
Yeah. So, if you're not familiar with this, go to the Mac Observer. And Andrew Orr had a short piece on we're witnessing the death of Tumblr in real time. The issue, two things have happened here recently. First of all, Tumblr got caught, well, inadvertently, apparently, with some child porn posted on its site. And
obviously Tumblr did not post that.
Correct.
Tumblr users, there were some Tumblr users who were using the site to distribute the stuff.
Correct. And one of the reasons it hit, I think, all of our radar is that Apple pulled the Tumblr app from the App Store because of this issue. So one of Tumblr's responses to this has been that it's now going to eliminate all adult-oriented images from the website. Okay, so that's their choice, and that's fine. And by the way, this is not an advocacy of porn in any way, shape, or form, but it's a reality, and it was there on Tumblr. So now they've implemented algorithms to try to seek out and eliminate all the adult images on Tumblr. The problem is that those algorithms are determining that pretty much anything and everything is adult-oriented content and needs to be deleted.
Oops.
Yeah. And I think Andrew's point is just right on that, you know, this if I had signed up for Tumblr under the understanding that I could post adult-oriented images for whatever reason, and now they change the game on me this far in when I have all this content on my site, yeah, I would say never again. You know, and I would encourage other people not to. I sound like I'm arguing for porn, and that's not it. I'm arguing that, you know, if you build your foundation on something like this and then pull the plug out from under it, and this may in some weird way relate back to just what we were talking about with Facebook and Tim Cook's focus on privacy. You know, that's been one of Apple's hallmarks is privacy. And the acceptability of porn seems to be one that was part of Tumblr's. It was part of Tumblr's identity. You have to wonder who at Yahoo, who I think at the time owned Tumblr, I'm not sure if they do, honestly, I'm still not sure if they do now, but who was watching this and who let it get this far out of hand? And is this an overreaction? Again, all questions you have to ask, but it's one more blogging platform that some people have invested a lot of time and effort in. And now, not only is it going to take out a lot of content out, which it maybe should, maybe shouldn't, but it's going to drop the traffic to that platform. And that's where if I had invested a lot of time and effort in Tumblr, and all of a sudden the audience to anything, you know, Tumblr.com was going to be, you know, halved or quartered or more, I think I'd be kind of upset.
All right, I have a maybe. But I have a more interesting angle on this, Chuck.
Okay.
The interesting angle is the failure of algorithms to, you know, to rule our freaking lives. Like, and this does go back to Facebook's problem. You know, a big part of Facebook's problem was automating everything and having no human oversight over anything. And that's what humans were able to manipulate in the politics and other issues where parties were using Facebook's platform to achieve their political ends using lies and misinformation and fake news. Right?
Okay.
A big part of that stems from the fact that it was all automated. And like this I think that we are seeing play out, I think what we're really seeing play out in real time is the failure of big tech's belief that algorithms can, in fact, manage all the stuff. You don't need any humans to do anything.
That's not a bad angle, and I don't disagree with it. I do realize, though, that realistically, with the volume that apparently Tumblr was getting, and certainly the volume Facebook gets, you know, how you have to rely to some degree on those things.
Yeah, and apparently they were relying too much, and apparently Facebook was relying too much. Yeah, I'm not saying that computers are bad. I love algorithms.
No,
algorithms are amazeballs. Sure. Machine learning is a great thing, and it's going to continue to radically reshape life as we know it. But there are things that you need human judgment on.
So, Brian, does this take us to a point where that we seem to have, I think this is a theme with tech, and I'm guilty of it, and I'm sure you are too, that something comes down the line and we think, wow, this is great. You know, this is the end all be all. And then you find out, oh, okay, it's not quite there yet. I mean, machine learning is a perfect example. You know, it's good, but it's not great. Voice recognition is good. It's getting better, but it's not completely there yet. Is that what we're seeing here with the algorithms that we're talking about? And
I think the difference between, like, even what Amazon is doing with Alexa and even what Google is doing with Google Home and Google Voice Assistant or, you know, whatever else the crap Google's doing, and even what Apple is doing with Siri, that the difference there is that those algorithms aren't making decisions. Like, you know, Apple has human curation going on with music in Apple Music, and Apple has human curation going on in Apple News, and Apple has human curation going on in the App Store. Right? They didn't just stick the App Store up, set up a bunch of algorithms to decide what was what, and let it be good.
Right.
I think is the wiser choice.
At this point,
At this point, yeah. That could well, it probably will change for good or for ill. That will change at some point. Machine learning will get better. The algorithms will get better. And an argument can be made that, you know, you got to go through the teething process to get there. But I think at the end of the day, there are a lot of things that we still need human intervention involvement in, and distribution of content is probably one of those things.
Well, obviously, in this case, it would seem to be. But I think that tech has kind of shot itself in the foot here, because it promotes itself as, you know, always being ones and zeros, black and white, yes
Apple
and no, doesn't. Good and bad.
Apple touts its human curation.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But it also, I mean, it would have you believe that Siri is, sorry, folks, I shouldn't have said that. Hope I didn't invoke anything. That their assistant has a super high degree of accuracy. I find it good. I find it getting better constantly, but it's still
it's still lacking.
It's still lacking. And so is the Amazon, and so is the Google. You know, we're just not quite there yet. But it's one of those things that it's an interesting phenomenon to watch. It's interesting to watch the decisions that are being made and people reacting or perhaps overreacting. The you know, the leopard trying to change its spots right in front of your eyes. You know, at some point, I guess you got to be what you are. And it doesn't mean you can't change, but maybe you just need to start over. It'll leave the Tumblr platform alone and start something new and migrate, you know, non-adult content to that. Or maybe migrate the adult content over to something and just leave it there and stop trying to weed it out, because you end up weeding out stuff that shouldn't, and correctly should not, be weeded out.
Here's a question for you. Today, Apple announced, or in the Shortcuts app, added the ability to post directly to Tumblr from the Shortcuts
app. I saw that.
Coincidence? Not a coincidence for timing.
Oh, I would think there's a bit of coincidence there.
Nope.
You really don't think so?
I think that it would not. No, actually, you know, you're gonna challenge me, and I'm going to bow down to your challenge. I don't know. I don't know that it was entirely coincidental. I don't know how maniacal Tim Cook is about his anti-porn stance.
I guess my take would be that if there had been a serious child pornography issue on it, I bet that shortcut would never have seen the light of day.
Yeah, for sure. But like if that hadn't come up, I don't know that there would have been any issue. So yeah, to your point.
Yeah.
All right. Next topic.
Let's do it.
Next topic is Wall Street punishing Apple?
Okay.
So the idea being that Apple stopped reporting iPhone sales, and so Wall Street investors are, you know, basically freaking out about, you know, obviously tumbling iPhone unit sales, and therefore, you know, they're dumping the stock. Is that was the thing I think that you mentioned is what you wanted to talk about.
Well, I brought it up again just because it's interesting to see everyone's interpretation of different things. And I've heard a number of commentators, not analysts as in stock analysts, but a number of commentators talk about the fact that the analysts are punishing Apple because they are not giving them this raw material with which to prognosticate. And I carefully chose the word prognosticate because we've had some of these discussions, Brian, over on my show too, about the analysts and where they're coming from and what they're doing and why they're doing it. And it does, you do have to wonder. I mean, I think it's been a legitimate question to ask that, okay, Apple has been the subject of so much study, so much speculation. It seems like every day there's another analyst coming out, setting his stock price up, setting a stock price down, sometimes with good reason, sometimes based on rumor, sometimes based on, you know, what kind of coffee he had in the morning or how much. And if I were Tim Cook, I'm not sure that everyone is entitled to know all this information.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to start pooping all over this.
Okay, well, I was kind of hoping you might.
Because, Apple isn't entitled to keep secrets, and Apple isn't and Wall Street isn't entitled to know those secrets either. So, you know, as a public company, there are some things that Apple must report, which includes sales.
Right.
Top and bottom line.
Right.
Right. And then offer guidance for the next, I think for the next quarter I don't know what's required of a public company to disclose, but I believe that they are required to disclose at least a quarter's worth of guidance.
Yeah, I think that is correct.
Now,
you're right.
How you get to the top and bottom line is another issue. And most companies have to if they want Wall Street to think that they're the bee's knees, they have to give Wall Street information. And Apple is in this unique situation, this incredibly unique situation, where they are so successful and they make so much money, they really don't have to necessarily follow all the rules. And Apple has been reducing the amount of information that it gives to Wall Street for years and years and years and years. Like, and you know, if we look at Apple Watch, Apple has never disclosed unit sales.
Right.
And I think that certainly Apple, like the vast majority of companies, would prefer to give Wall Street nothing. I'm sure that that's the case. But most companies can't get away with that. Apple has been able to get away with pulling more and more information away from analysts, away from investors. And this time they may have gone too far.
Okay, so let's go back. And there are a couple things you said there, and I've trying to remember the second one. But the first one is that you're saying Apple is not having to abide by all the rules. Yes, they are. They're having to abide by the rules. They may not be abiding by the practices that have become common, but they are abiding by the rules.
That's Wall Street gets to set its own rules that are separate from what the regulator set. Doesn't mean that a company has to follow them.
Right, right. And you're right. Apple is in a position to push back a little bit.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, okay, you, listen, again, I sound like I'm wavering, and I'm asking the questions without really having any answers. But is it a bad thing that they push back?
It's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that this decision to not report iPhone unit sales is because Apple knows that iPhone unit sales are going to be flat to negative over the next few years.
And
that they don't want to be judged by that.
And
Wall Street would like to judge them by that.
Right.
Wall Street gets to want to judge them by that.
Right. But is it a bad thing that Apple is not doing it?
Wall Street doesn't get what they want. I would say, yeah, it is sort of a bad thing, because I think that if iPhone sales were continuing to go up, that Apple wouldn't have done this. So the fact that they did do this, I believe, means the opposite. And I believe that does not reflect well on Apple. If they had done this when iPhone year-over-year sales were constantly going up, if they'd done this, that would have been one thing. But when we get to this point where they are now, and Tim Cook gives us the song and dance about how, you know, judging the value of a shopping basket by the number of items in that shopping basket doesn't make sense. I mean, that's just it is just a song and dance.
Okay, but your judgment is predicated on the idea that Apple has done this for that specific reason, that they believe that iPhone sales are going to slow down and or go flat. Okay, so let's pretend for a second that that's not the case, that that's not what they believe, that they just chose this point in time to say enough's enough. We're tired of the supply chain rumors. We're tired of you constantly forecasting that, we didn't order as many iPhone XRs, and so we're not, you know, that's indicative of something, or that we change suppliers for the iPhone X, 10X, and that, excuse me, 10S, and that is indicative of something. I mean, this constant reading of the tea leaves, you know, I get frustrated because I watch the stock go up and down, and so much of it seems to be based purely on speculation.
But why, though, it's based on speculation? It's because Apple doesn't tell us anything. If Apple wants to combat the rumors, all they have to do is actually tell us what they're doing. You don't get your cake and eat it, too.
Yeah, but then you're communicating valuable business information to your competitors, and you can't have that cake and eat it, too.
So what?
What do you mean, so what?
Did Samsung, knowing how many iPhone 6s were sold, help Samsung?
Is TMO going to broadcast what the stories it plans to cover tomorrow, today?
That is the most ridiculous comparison I can imagine.
No, it's a perfectly valid comparison, because you have corporate company secrets or company operations that you would prefer not to give to a competitor. Apple has those same things.
The number of units that have been sold is not that much of a competitive advantage. It's just not. Apple is already competing by completely different rules in every product segment that it competes in.
If I'm Samsung and I know that the lowest priced iPhone, or maybe the highest priced iPhone, is where the sales are going, then I'm more likely to produce whichever one of those I think I can compete with and target that market.
If you're Samsung, you can already find that information out to a degree that is accurate enough for your uses.
Perhaps, but other companies want to get in the business.
What I'm saying is that Apple has cut back on talking about unit sales when unit sales have not been climbing, and that is far and away from just like. The idea that they're doing it because they're tired of the rumors, that doesn't make any sense, because now the rumors are the only thing that Wall Street has to judge them by. It empowers the people who are trying to manipulate the stock it empowers the misinformation, because Apple's not going to counter that misinformation.
I agree with that to a point, but I think at some point, and it's in a short point, that folks then are therefore going to stop listening to rumors. I mean, right now.
They're going to grab hold of every rumor they can, because that's all they know. It's all they can get.
Well, the tech press and the analysts will, because you know they have to do something. They have to feed their clients something. But it's I'm not going to listen to an analyst's recommendations as closely as I did, because there's less information. So I don't see it as a bad thing,
that makes no sense to me.
Oh, well,
don't forget this other premise that a lot of Apple fanboys — I'm not calling you a fanboy. Sounds like I just called you a fanboy, and that's not what I meant.
Okay.
But there are a lot of people who love Apple and look at the stock, and they forget the fact that the value of Apple stock is bestowed by Wall Street in the form of investors. And if those investors want to take away some of that value, they get to. And if they want to add to that value, they get to. And if Wall Street is saying, we're giving you X amount of value because we're able to measure your iPhone sales, and we're able to measure iPhone profits, and we're able to measure things like average selling price, and because we can do that, we're going to give you this much value. When Apple takes that away, Wall Street gets to take away that value.
Or bestow more value.
Right. So far, what we're seeing is the taking away of the value.
Right. And we've kind of come full circle to the discussion of, is Facebook's stock price decline, is it because of some of the things we talked about, or is it just the general decline in the market? And the same thing is true here with Apple.
Yeah, and I, again with Apple, I think it's actually I do think they're both pretty similar. The general downturn, the fears of economic war, the broader concerns of the market, the deficits, the U.S. deficit skyrocketing. All of these things are helping to push down the market. And then on top of that, Apple has some things that Wall Street is a little iffy about, including no longer reporting iPhone unit sales. So you've got one feeding the other.
Right. And is it really the investors that are reacting to that, or is it the investors reacting to what the analysts are saying to them? That's kind of my question and my point is, you know, how much influence should the analysts have?
The analysts get to have all the influence if investors are willing to give it to them.
Yes, absolutely. And so I'm saying I'm not sure that I will, call Apple fanboy or not, if I have someone that can't give – that is not getting that information, I may not listen to them as much. And that –
Yeah, that's not really how it works on Wall Street.
This time, the
analysts have clients, and those clients are paying the analysts for information and for viewpoints. That's not going to change. If anything, they will be more empowered because Apple isn't countering it with, or isn't feeding it with additional information.
Or Apple is drying up the flow of information, and the analysts aren't happy about it because now they don't have as much to sell.
What analysts are selling to their clients is information that's not coming from Apple. That's always been the case. Now this is going to echo the rumor mill. This is going to empower the rumor mill. It's not going to dry it up.
I agree with that. It will empower, because they have nothing else to do, so they're going to go and look for rumors.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. But I'm trying to come up with a good analogy, and I'm having trouble with that. But if I know that the quality of information is not as good as what it used to be.
But that information has never come from Apple like that. What are you talking about?
Well, wait a minute.
I mean, like Apple once a quarter, Apple says what we just did. And analysts, you know, are saying, are you know, fit that into their existing viewpoints and they compare it to what they were expecting. But those expectations were never coming from Apple. Those expectations are always coming from the information they could glean from other sources.
Oh, but you can't have it both ways, Brian. You know, one minute you're saying...
Are you just meeting me?
Well, yeah, that's true. But one minute you're saying that the analysts aren't relying on the information from Apple. The next minute you're saying that Apple is hurting them, or their Apple is hurting itself by not giving them information. You can't go both ways.
I am saying that Apple not giving this information is going to amplify the rumors. Amplify the power of the rumors. That's what I'm saying. And that if Apple wants to counter the rumors, they can best counter those rumors by telling us stuff. And if Apple doesn't want to tell us stuff, Apple doesn't get to be pissy when Wall Street reacts negatively to that.
And I guess we have to agree to disagree, because I think if Apple has the right, they're not violating any laws. They are violating what has become common practice.
Well, investors aren't violating any laws by punishing Apple for this decision. Right? Apple's stock price does not exist in a vacuum.
Do you really think that any investor stopped and said, hey, I'm going to sell Apple because they're not reporting their numbers anymore?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, really? Certainly at the institutional level.
Perhaps at the institutional level, but the institutional level is guided by analysts.
Yeah, and the institutional level is where most of the money's coming from.
Okay, everybody, this is not stock advice, but go buy Apple.
Yeah, I did. I bought a couple more shares on the way down. Unfortunately, it was not at the bottom, but it was on the way down because I did consider it to be a buying opportunity. And I'm not offering any stock advice. And I still have a tiny, tiny, tiny stake.
Yeah. Well, but on the other hand, you know, if you can get yourself a couple of hamburgers, you know, why not?
Yeah, a fair point. A fair point. All right. I'm not sure we're going to solve this particular issue.
Yeah. But I do accept your apology.
Absolutely, positively not offered.
I love you, Brian. Likewise. Folks, you should come to WWDC. These kind of arguments happen at about what, Brian? 11:30, 12, 1, yeah. 2 in the morning.
Yeah, we get into the lobby of your hotel and start arguing politics and technology.
Yeah, and the clerks at the desk look worriedly at us as we're as we become more and more heated.
that just may be me though.
Well,
they just may be worried about me. All right, so listen, I'm going to do this and then say, and that's this week's Apple Context Machine. I'd like to thank Chuck Joyner for co-hosting this week.
Thank you, Brian. It was a blast. It was a blast.
I'm not done. If you have anything to say, comment on, add, question, whatever, you can write us at acm@macobserver.com. Or you can join us over at Facebook. By the way, I can't tell you how many times, Chuck, I have complained about Facebook and then directed people to our Facebook group. Because I like our group. I like groups. Groups are Facebook has done something with groups no one else has done. Successfully, at least not to the degree of success. Our content. No, that's not true. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Bases by Boom, recorded just for TMO. Chuck again. Chuck is the producer and host of Mac Voices. Those are video podcasts. I heartily recommend it. You should check them out. Now you can do your thing, Chuck.
Thank you, Brian. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And I was waiting for you to give me permission.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Is that it? Is that all you have to say?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Rock on. Are professionals.
I love that bass line.